Well, good evening and welcome to this month's Big Sky Mental Health Forum. This month's topic is the intersection of diversity and inclusion with mental health. My name is Janie Nadolski, and I am the Senior Associate Commissioner of the Big Sky Conference, and I am very excited for tonight's panel discussion. Tonight's event is the second in a series of forums focused on mental health of student athletes. Last month, we discussed coping with quarantine, social distancing, uncertainty, anxiety in a time of COVID. Our next forum is scheduled for November 12th and we'll discuss suicide prevention. I'd like to introduce tonight's panelists as well as our moderator. Anne Grisonic is a member of the Big Sky Mental Health Subcommittee and is the Director of Wellness at Montana State University. Kenny McDaniel is also a member of the Big Sky Mental Health Subcommittee and is the track and field coach at Sacramento State. Debbie Corum is the Athletic Director at Southern Utah University. Grant Stevens is a senior football student athlete at Northern Colorado, majoring in human services. Skye Lindsay is a junior women's basketball student athlete at Montana State University, majoring in film and sociology. Balea Akana Phillips is a senior soccer student athlete at Idaho State University, where she is majoring in general studies and visual media. And Isaiah Brown is a graduate men's basketball student athlete at Weber State University, studying English. And finally, our moderator, Kim Davis, is a senior director of diversity inclusion at Eastern Washington University. This event is scheduled for 1 hour, including a question and answer period. However, the panelists have agreed to stay on for an after hours for a less formal discussion with the attendees. Please feel free to submit any questions or comments you have in the chat box. This is being recorded and will be available on the Big Sky Mental Health Resource page located at www.bigskyconf.com. And with that, I turn the time over to Kim and our panel.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's so good to see such a great turnout tonight. Thank you all for coming for this very, very important conversation. Again, I'm Kim Davis. I would be remiss if I didn't say go Eagles from Eastern Washington University. And y'all can feel free to give a shout out to your teams too. So I'm really excited for our panelists today. And so we're just going to go ahead and get started. We really want to give the floor over to our student athletes as the first priority. So I'll be going with them first, and then we can hear from the professionals. But we are really excited to hear from our students today. So for our panelists, and we're going to start with Isaiah, what ways do you see your athletics department addressing diversity and inclusion? What could an athletic department do to increase awareness and advocacy for diversity and inclusion as it relates to mental health?
I think the biggest thing for us is just, realizing that looking at the different student athletes that you may have on the prospective teams. I know, for us, for men's basketball, speaking for my group, realizing that everybody has a different experience and, everybody's kind of going through something different. Everybody processes things mentally in a different way, and everybody's life experiences definitely affects that. So, it's listening, it's talking, being aware if maybe something seems off about one of your players or one of your teammates or something like that. So I definitely think that, like I said, speaking for my group, our coaching staff and the surrounding staff on our team, I think definitely make a concerted effort, which is, all you can really want anybody to do, to notice those things and to be people that we can trust and talk to and be open with. I think from a standpoint of where that can go even further, from a mental health perspective, I think is just representation, kind of speaking back to, everybody kind of having a different journey or a different perspective or having different life experiences. And it's really important that, no matter who you are, where you come from or what your, cultural background is, that there's somebody that you can go to, somebody that, can understand you and speak to you in a language that, is like your own. So. From a perspective of where we can progress in that, I think just being more diverse in the representation on campuses and allowing student athletes to have somebody that maybe looks like them or shares an experience with them that they can go to and confide in.
Great. Thank you so much, Isaiah. How about you, Skye? Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, going along with Isaiah, I emphasized how critical and important it is that people have other people that could have a shared experience and a shared understanding. I think that it's hard to recognize when it hasn't been an issue for other people before, but it definitely makes a world of difference, and I think that would help promote mental wellness throughout, across the board.
Great. Thank you, Sky. Okay, how about you, Grant? What can you share with us?
Being at the University of Northern Colorado, I've been blessed to be surrounded by coaches who have taken time to listen and hear the things that are on the minds of a lot of our student athletes. You know, in light of all the social events that have been taking place, a big emphasis is how can we aid our minority and particularly Black student athletes and really meet them on their level and really understand what they're going through. But I brought up in our pre-panel discussion yesterday, I think the biggest thing, because we have primarily white coaches in the Big Sky, is the pursuit of knowledge on how to better aid our student athletes. You don't have to have all the answers, but I think the biggest thing that we need to do is find what ways can I better communicate with our student athletes, particularly our Black student athletes in our recent times, and say, how can I connect with them? There's many stigmas in Black communities that, you know, Black people don't do therapy and that we don't really have knowledge about the benefits of therapy and psychology. How can I meet them on their level? What ways can I learn how to better meet them on their level so that they can be their best? I feel like that's priority in the time that we're in right now, meeting student athletes on their level and finding new ways in which we can meet them at their level.
Great. Thank you so much, Grant. And last but not least from our students, Lawalea, please.
Yeah, going off of what Grant said, you know, I think the biggest thing is anyone can always educate themselves on more, whether it be mental health awareness or diversity and inclusion. Here at ISU, our athletic department is doing a wonderful job of, you know, through these tough times, educating, you know, whether you're white or Black, you're still learning every day on how to deal with social interactions and, you know, things on and off the field. So just educating yourself, whether you're a student athlete or a coach or, you know, you're just someone in the community, that can be a big help to you as well.
Great. Thank you so much. So I'd love to hear from some of our professionals. Coach McDaniel, do you have anything to add to that?
I understand, you know, what a lot of these student athletes, you know, where they are coming from. Just to, you know, for my role, just to focus on my role at you know, at Sac State or even my previous stints at different universities. You know, I've had athletes come talk to me from different sports, you know, from football, basketball, tennis, other sports, just because I look like them. And so I understand, you know, what, you know, where this could lead to, because you want to be comfortable. It's like when you go to the mall, you're going to go to the stores that you normally shop at. And so it's the same way with, when the student athletes walk into the athletic department, they looking for, someone they can confide in and also someone to, they can, you know, talk to, you know. And so for me, I cherish the role actually, because when athletes see me, you know, I give them hope, you know, that they can be a head coach one day or AD one day. Because as you know, as you guys know, here at Sac State, we have African American, athletic director as well as my sports supervisor, Marcus Jennings, is also African American. So it just gives kids hope that they can do it. And so, I cherish the moment. I love it. I love the role, that I can help just not only my athletes, but I can help athletes in the entire athletic department. So, I do understand. I don't want to call it a struggle though. It's not a struggle. It's just something that needs to be addressed. That's why this is very important and I don't take this lightly. But this is, I understand completely, you know, where they're coming from.
Great. Thank you so much. AD Corum, do you have anything you'd like to share?
I think, what Grant said and Lilea said, and others were really important, Sky, about listening. And I think as a leader, it's very important for me as a leader of our department to constantly put the message out there of what's important to us and have those conversations, especially about listening. And I think it's really important also for me, Coach talked about how he looks, they come to him because he looks like them. I think it's really important for us as leaders to try as hard as we can to add diversity to our coaching staff and to our administration. And that's something that we've been working on, and we've got to get better. But it's been something that we've been conscientiously trying to work on. But I think the biggest thing is to make it okay to have those conversations with our staff. We had an all staff meeting this morning, and we had an incident on Friday that was uncomfortable for some of our student athletes. And we talked about it in our all staff meeting today with all of our administrators, our entire staff, all of our assistant coaches, head coaches. So having those conversations to make everybody aware that things might be different for people when they go out to different restaurants or different things like that. And just the awareness and listening to the student athletes and creating an environment where they feel safe to come and talk to us. I think those are the really important things as a leader.
Thank you so much. Okay, and Erin, you're our counselor in the group. And so what have you been seeing on the front lines of this work?
I think I'd like to echo what the students all said, and in terms of mental health and support, 50-60% of the time, if a student is going to receive some kind of help from a professional in my field, it's going to be someone that looks like me, white male. And then probably the other 40-ish percent, you're going to get a white female. And I think that there is discrepancy in our field. And I think just here, what the student said, that puts us all at a disadvantage if we're not able to help and connect with the students in the best way that we can. So I think what I'd like to do is just echo what was said by everybody, in that having equitable hiring practices, hiring people of color, hiring people from diverse backgrounds to do the work from all the top all the way down seems to be the most important thing in terms of doing this work, whether it's outreach to student athletes or coaching them.
Great. Thank you so much. So I'm going to just tell you a little bit about my background. I'm half Mexican, and in my personal culture, I'm a little tiny bit older than our student athletes. I'm not going to claim that, but what I found in my family is number one, and you don't talk about family, even to a counselor. So I had a little bit of stigma at times when I felt like I needed to talk to somebody. So what I want to know from our panelists is, do you think there's still stigma surrounding getting help for mental health issues among community of colors or other marginalized identities? And if so, can you shed some light on your experiences, and do you have any strategies for confronting those stigmas? So I'm going to start this time with Grant.
I'd say absolutely. And I've been blessed. I'm the son to Miss Janice Courtney Stevens. She's my first love, and she's put a big emphasis on my mental health and just my stability my whole life. I'm really blessed to have that. But I come from a background where I'm surrounded by primarily black men and women, who some of which have their fathers in their lives, some of which have their mothers in their lives, and many don't have either. And they don't have resources or people to tell them that what they're going through is okay. I had a conversation with one of my former teammates, and I'm listening to him tell me about how he witnessed his brother get killed. And in those communities, there's no people saying, hey, you need to go to counseling. Hey, those things that you're feeling, they're okay, but we need to talk about these things. There's no resources, no education about those things, which is why I bring up the point, when we have white coaches who may be particularly uncomfortable talking about these things, it's imperative that you're intentional about seeking ways in which you can aid these student athletes, because many of them don't know that what they've gone through is considered trauma and horrible things that have happened in their lives that deserve attention. I think it's imperative that we're intentional about meeting kids at their level and that's going to be very uncomfortable. But the fact of the matter is, not every kid is like Grant, who has a mother who is seeking to, how can I best help my child? Not everyone has that. And we need to be thinking about the children who don't have that. How do we reach them? How do we let them know that, hey, what you're going through is hard and your voice matters? That's the biggest thing my mother always taught me. Son, that your voice matters. But my heart goes out to kids who didn't have a mother to tell them that. How can we as the Big Sky be the voice to tell people that, hey, your voice matters? It doesn't matter if you're Black, a minority, Mexican, gay, transgender. It doesn't matter. Your voice matters, and the things that you've gone through deserve attention from us. And that's how we're going to serve you as coaches and members of the Big Sky.
Thank you so much. That's very, very insightful. So let's hear from Sky next, please.
Definitely have, like, witnessed throughout my experiences with my friends across the board. Usually my friends of color have, when we've talked about mental health and therapy and finding a therapist, it's been harder just because of the lack of representation and because of the stigmas around going to get therapy in the first place, about how that's not mentally strong. That's like, you don't need that kind of help if you don't have like problems. Does that make sense? And what Grant was saying, most people kind of normalize the traumas that they've been through, the things that they've experienced, because it's the thing that's like kind of, it's a day-to-day thing, like the microaggressions and lots of experiences that minorities and people that basically just are different from the normal heteronormative culture experience. And so I do think that there's a disparity among the communities that are different from what is normal, what is seen as normal. And I think it's super important that we provide more resources and make it more easy to access these things, and less of a stigma, less of a, oh, you have problems, but hey, we've all dealt with stuff and it's okay to go and get help. It's okay to go and just like, not even help, but just support and ways to like filter through what you've been through and what's going on. And I think it's critical to have staff and coaches. And I've been blessed with great administration and great coaching staff and stuff that do encourage mental health and, you know, talk about it as a normal thing. But I think it's important to stress too, beyond just the athletic community, saying, hey, it's okay, especially for people that are minorities and that are a little bit different.
Thank you so much. How about you, Laulea?
So for me, I have 2 points. I mean, the first one, I guess, would be, you know, like, there's a stigma coming into college, like, whether you're a freshman or a first year student at a university and you're a student athlete, you carry around that weight on you. Like, you know, I'm a student athlete, like, I have to be tough, I have to look a certain way, I have to dress a certain way. And I think people just, you know, have that brainwash in their head, like, I need to be this and look like this to do this for my, like, you know, to represent like your athletic community. But in times it's not, like, you know, that, like Grant and Sky said, like, people are going through things that you may never know about. It's allowing people to be comfortable and be vulnerable with themselves and, you know, with people that they're comfortable with. So, you know, it's bridging the gap with, you know, underclassmen and upperclassmen, you know, letting them know that there is a maturity of mental health along the way. Like, for me, like, I'm a senior, but I never knew mental health would be such an important issue to me as I grew throughout the years. And I think the one stigma that I grew up with is I'm not Black, but like, I'm Polynesian, I'm Hawaiian, and we as Polys, we carry around like, oh, you need to be that tough guy, like that tough girl. And it's just a part of our culture at some point. So, you know, like, facing that barrier and like knowing that it's okay to, you know, be different and, you know, reach out to the people, reach out and get help. So it's just being vulnerable and like get deep, digging deep inside yourself to let yourself to do that.
Thank you so much. Okay, Isaiah, what do you have to add to this?
Yeah, I think I would, you know, I would absolutely echo, you know, the points of everybody. I think, you know, a lot of the things, when I think about a stigma or maybe where, you know, where that stigma comes from, you know, I think that there's a sense of, and I can speak obviously for the Black community, and I know this is true as well in many minority communities that, you know, seeking therapy or seeking help or something like that, is almost seen as a luxury that we don't necessarily have access to. And, you know, growing up in a certain environment, kind of like Laulea just said, you know, we are taught that, these are things that you just get through and, you know, things that you figure out how to deal with on your own, however that may be. And I think something that Grant said that was really important is, a lot of these kids grow up in these communities and have no idea that the things that they experience are 100%, you know, a categorized trauma. These are things that, you know, everyday people are not going through, losing, you know, loved ones at an extremely early age, growing up without a father, growing up in impoverished communities, growing up in project housing. Those things are, you know, traumatic experiences that have really, really long lasting effects on, you know, mental health and mental wellness and somebody's well-being as a whole. And I think a lot of the reason why is because, you know, from a cultural standpoint, some of the things that you have to deal with being, you know, Black in this country or being Polynesian in this country or Asian in this country, it's become almost kind of a cultural value that, you know, you need to have the thickest skin of anybody around just to be able to kind of survive, with the color of your skin or with, you know, the kind of the cards that you've been dealt. And so, you know, we don't grow up and see anybody that goes to therapy, you know, none of our friends or our fathers, you know, my dad is 60 years old. You know, my dad grew up in the 50s and 60s. My dad's never been to therapy, but I guarantee you that he's been through a lot of things that he should absolutely have gone to therapy for. And a lot of things that, you know, if he told anybody else or if he had a conversation with anybody else, they'd be shocked to hear and absolutely would consider it, you know, traumatic events or traumatic, you know, traumatic experience. And, you know, we're taught to just to deal with things, to find ways to cope. And I think that, you know, like I said, it's become almost a cultural value, and the consequences that is, you know, a lot of the time those things don't get dealt with and they lead to much bigger issues and they lead to, you know, an entire generation of people that are, you know, experiencing more stress and more anxiety and things like that. And there's not a lot of people that are telling kids of any, you know, any background or any socioeconomic or cultural background that that's something that they need to do. And it's okay to get help and it's normal. And everybody, you know, is going through something that they need to talk to somebody about. So, yeah, the stigma is absolutely, you know, still there. And like I said, to echo what everybody else said, that's just one layer. And, you know, you add being an athlete on top of that, and there's a whole other expectation, you know, that you feel and a whole other pressure that you feel to kind of mask those emotions. So.
Yeah, thank you so much, Isaiah. And on top of that, we have COVID, we have some isolation we're experiencing, we have the political climate, we have all of the things we're seeing in the social justice world, and having to try and process all of that is, you know, something that, you know, that could be helped, help along. So I appreciate you all being so open and transparent about the importance of getting mental health. Like I always say, mental health counselors have mental health counselors because we all need somebody to talk to that's impartial and that we can express what we're feeling. So Aaron, yesterday you had talked a little bit about discrepancy of referrals. Would you mind just talking about that a little bit?
Sure. As the students were talking, I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if coaches and staff went and got counseling themselves and talked about it, normalized it for their players, you know? But yeah, you know, most of my the referrals I get are from coaches and coaching staff, and that involves a coach being concerned about a student athlete and sending me a text or an email or coming down to my office and describing kind of the things that the student might be struggling with, asking if they'd be appropriate. And, you know, I have noticed in my time that the students that are coming in or getting referred in that way, when they're students of color, or from other, some other, more marginalized, group, they tend to have, more serious, things that they're working through. And, that may not be mental health diagnoses, but more serious life concerns and things that they're struggling with. And, I tend to see, the white athletes, not that they don't have serious issues too, but I see them a little bit sooner. And, you know, I do see that. And going back to the point that we talked about earlier, you know, I think that, that's also self-referral, you know, and I'm more likely to get, a student walking in my door, knocking on the door, if they're white, for other, you know, reasons that may not be as serious and, you know, the students of color, and it could be because, you know, the way I look or something like that too, but, you know, they're coming in when things seem a lot more serious and a lot more drastic. And, you know, I think that, having more people in my position of color would definitely be helpful. I also think that, recognizing and getting to know the athletes, on a personal level is important and knowing, what kinds of issues somebody, can get help for is important. Even if they're playing the best at their sport, I think it's that doesn't mean that they're not suffering and struggling with something.
Great, thank you so much. For time's sake, I'm going to move on to the next question, and this one's for our student athletes. So if you're comfortable talking about it, what are some of the stereotypes and microaggressions you've experienced from teammates or other students, possibly faculty and staff? And if anybody doesn't know what a microaggression is, it's daily insults, body language, different things that occur very regularly to people of color or other marginalized identities that cause them cumulatively to impact mental health and physical health and a lot of other things. One thing I do want to mention before I start asking the students for their perspective is that we are, when we talk about diversity and inclusion, we are talking about identities in a broad way. Today we are focusing quite a bit on race and ethnicity, but that does not exclude, you know, the LGBTQ experience, people with access and ability, you know, things like that. So I want to make sure that you all know that we are acknowledging that diversity includes all of those identities and that every identity is affected in different ways, but, you know, today we are, you know, we're focusing more on that, but also in the after conversation, we would love to continue that. So for our students, again, if you're comfortable talking about it, what are some of the stereotypes and microaggressions you experience from teammates, other students, and faculty and staff? And let's go ahead and start with Lawalea first this time.
Yeah, so, I mean, coming from an island, like I lived on Hawaii my whole life, and coming here to Idaho State, obviously it's a predominantly white city that I live in now. But I've dealt with things that I've never dealt with in my life back at home. For one, like, I've had a couple professors that seem to treat me differently. Like, during our finals week, I saw a professor shake everyone's hand after they turned in their final and not mine, and I felt a little left out. And then another thing that I like deal with more often on daily is how I'm looked at. Like, yes, I'm not black, I'm not white, but you know, I get the looks, whether I'm in my car or walking along the street, people just seem to stare. And you know, like your parents teach you staring is not polite when you're little, but, you know, they still do it. And to me, I feel differently inside. Like, you know, I'm wondering, like, do they really understand, like, who I am or where I'm coming from? No, but, you know, it's just like a social norm in our life today where, you know, we just look at people because they're different. And for me, it's impacted my mental health tremendously. Like, you know, am I being targeted? Am I being looked at? Like, why am I different compared to them? Like, I know I have a different skin color, but it has impacted my mental health as a student athlete. And, you know, like, I do talk about it to people, and it still happens to this day, but, you know, I'm working on it, and not like it's going to stop tomorrow, but, yeah, that's the stigma and the stereotype that I get a lot around here.
Thank you for sharing so vulnerably with all of us. How about Isaiah?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one thing that I can definitely, you know, I guess I feel as well as, you know, being from a place that I'm from Seattle and you know, obviously it's a very maybe, you know, more than anywhere in the country, a very liberal, very inclusive community. And so that's what I'm accustomed to. And it's not that, you know, you don't go through the same kind of things that, you know, in Seattle that you would get anywhere else. You still get the looks, there's still microaggressions. That's going to happen everywhere. But obviously being in, you know, a predominantly white environment now here in Utah, which I know a lot of us are, whether we're in, you know, Utah or Montana or in Idaho. It's definitely, I think, you know, from kind of a broader perspective, I'm lucky, obviously, that, you know, the sport that I play is a predominantly black sport. I have predominantly black teammates. And so I think we bond, obviously, and we share a lot of those same experiences. And, you know, that becomes something that we bond over. It helps us bond together. But obviously, you know, the kind of, I guess, normal things, just daily things, going to the grocery store, and you walk in the grocery store and everything kind of stops. Everybody kind of stops and turns. And you can tell sometimes it's subconscious. It's not necessarily something that anybody means to do. But there is this feeling of being the other, you know, or in an environment that isn't necessarily equipped or doesn't necessarily, you know, have the things that I think we normally, you know, come from to make us feel comfortable in a certain environment. And so you definitely feel that, you know. I feel that walking around. I feel that when I go to the grocery store and go to the mall and, you know, kind of any interaction that I have. Whether I think it's, you know, on purpose or not, I just think, that feeling of being somewhat on the outside or being, you know, able to notice that somebody doesn't necessarily understand me. And maybe that's, you know, that manifests by, you know, they're staring at you. They ask you, you know, something that's a little bit backhanded, or I get, you know, backhanded compliments all the time about how eloquent I sound or, you know, something like that. And, even though that, you know, may mean no harm to someone, you know, we obviously understand, you know, what stereotype that comes from. And, you know, maybe in their mind, what I'm expected to sound like or act like or look like based on who they believe me to be. So, it's definitely something that I think, you know, everybody, and obviously speaking from an African American perspective for our culture and people, that happens anywhere, but especially, you know, in a predominantly white, environment that, you know, a lot of us are in, especially being athletes, we stand out everywhere we go. So you always feel those extra eyes on you and things like that. So that's, you know, I think that's something that's been, pretty normalized. And now, you know, at 23, it's something that I don't even necessarily notice all that much anymore.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing. And I do want to just add on with, microaggressions and things, you know, one of the things you said was that maybe that was not the intent. Maybe the intent was not to insult or slight or that kind of thing. One of the things I just want to make sure is clear to everyone is that the impact of microaggressions are real. They need to be validated, and whether the intent was there or not. If somebody gives you the respect of letting you know that you have perpetrated a microaggression against them, you should be really intentional about receiving that information, validating the person to say, I understand how you could see it that way. I'm so sorry. And then change the behavior. So I appreciate you acknowledging intent because it still hurts. It doesn't matter if they intended to do it or not. So appreciate that. So next up, let's talk to Grant.
To Isaiah's point, that's the most common one that I get is I think it relates to expectation of people due to certain racial biases. When they see a large black African-American man, I'm sure Isaiah, many times in his everyday life, people I'm sure say, oh, I didn't expect you to speak very well. And that's just comes down to racial bias, because when you see somebody of color, you don't assume that that person knows how to use big words and use them in the proper context. And the same thing when you go in a grocery store. People look at you and they may not mean any harm, but mentally, when they think of criminal and they think of thug, their racial bias thinks, oh, brown skin. So it's not that they're intentionally trying to do something horrible, but it's just racial bias. You've been taught and you live in a society that teaches you that when you think of thug or you think of unintelligent or bad speakers, you think of brown people. And that's just the society that we live in. And that's not true. But that's the most common one that I've been given my entire life. It's just the expectations lower when it comes to a large African-American man. And that's the one I deal with most often. So I definitely relate to what Isaiah is saying.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Sky, did you have anything that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, just along with Isaiah, Grant, and Malia, I've experienced just kind of the similar things where wow, you speak really well for a black girl, and I've been followed on campus and in the grocery stores and stuff, just like, or just watched. And it is this like subtle thing that just kind of pervades like throughout your entire day. You can't go outside without being constantly reminded that you are different and that something, like, you have to direct yourself in a different manner. You have to be like, just exceptional in certain aspects. And a few other things that I've experienced haven't been as microaggression. Well, it would qualify as microaggression because I don't think that they meant it in a bad way, but they would, I've had experiences on campus with staff members that have like done things that are kind for me, but they add that little comment at the end just because you're black or, just kind of, it's great at the beginning and then just at the end, they hit with because of your race, because you look like this. So it's something that, it's kind of stunning because you're kind of like constantly thinking and worrying about something like this. And then, you let your guard down for a second and it happens again, I feel like. So it is a problem. I don't think like people necessarily intentionally mean this, but it's just a part of the culture and it's something that we need to change because it's not healthy.
Yeah, thank you all so much for sharing so vulnerably with everyone. I think a lot of times it's tough for people to hear those things. AD, Forum, you have something?
Yeah, could I just jump in real quick? That doesn't just happen to you as student athletes. I just want to say as a female athletic director, I face these kinds of things myself at the same time. Kind of, I'll just give you one example. Not too long ago, all the athletic directors from every school in the state of Utah got together to meet with Senator Mitt Romney to talk about actually the NIL. And all the men had talked to each other. I'm the only female athletic director in the state. So when I got there, I found out that all the men had talked to each other about what to wear. You know, it's very subtle, but they all decided to come casual. So they were all in polo shirts, golf shirts, and I was dressed to the hilt in a suit. You know, so I walked into the room and felt different, you know, I really identify with this because, I think that it can happen on a whole lot of different levels. So I just want you all to know it doesn't just happen to student athletes. It can happen to people at my level as well. So thanks for letting me interrupt.
Thank you so much for that perspective. Anybody else want to share before we move on? Grant?
I just wanted to ask a question to Ms. Debbie's point. I talked to my mom about this yesterday. In some of the committees that I'm in, I find that women, it seems almost like there's an unwritten rule that women don't speak first, or that women don't make loud or opinionated points. So, you know, being a man, never experiencing what it's like to be a woman, I'm a minority, I'm a black man, and those trials manifest in different ways. But I just wanted to kind of ask, like, how does that manifest for you, and have you experienced that where you feel as if I have to, like, pull back what I have because there are men in the conversation? Is that a thing? Like, how does that manifest?
Every AD meeting. Every single AD meeting. I bite my lips, you know, Sometimes I jump out there. Sometimes I do, because I actually have had a lot more experience. I've been doing this for 42 years. So I have a lot more experience than the other. A lot of the athletic directors in our conference are my children's age, to tell you the truth. So my experience is just a lot wider. A lot of times I want to jump in. So I'm constantly biting the inside of my lip. So yes, Grant, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm supposed to deal with this, even at my age and my experience. So I hate to be the bird. I wish I could tell you, oh, it gets better. It gets a little better. But yeah, you have to continue to keep working with yourself. Sometimes I get off of those AD meetings and I have to talk to myself. When we're talking about mental health here. And I have to tell myself that what I believe matters. And so I have to kind of build myself back up sometimes.
I was going to say, I have something to add to that. I was at an event at Gonzaga University, and we were doing a group discussion at a table. Our table was comprised of one white male, three white females, and two women of color, and I consider myself a woman of color. And they said, hey, okay, have a group discussion at the table. And what I witnessed was all of the women, so five women, when it was time to speak, all turned to the white male and waited for him to speak first. So not only is it that, you know, maybe men feel like they could speak first, but honestly, the women all deferred to him. And interestingly enough, he's a person who's done a lot of self-work. And he literally said, you know, I would like to hear from so-and-so. And she was one of the women of color at the table. And I really appreciated his awareness, where he's like, you know, I don't want to be the first one to talk. What do you think? And so, yeah, it's amazing how much we're socialized even as women to defer to a male voice. So I appreciate you noticing that, Grant. So thank you. Okay, so we're going to go on to the next question, because we've got a lot to cover, and we've got 15 minutes of the major forum here. Okay, so what resources are available for student athletes? How do you identify who needs help, and what can institutions do better to support the mental health of their student athletes? And we're going to start with the students, and then we'll hear from Erin, who's our counselor. So why don't we start with Grant this time?
On campus here, the main thing that Coach McCaffrey, our head coach, we have a leadership council, and we have certain guys designated to talk to specific people on our team. I think that's the biggest resource, you know, and I talk to our guys all the time about, you know, reaching out and meeting players, you know, like we know a lot of guys, we hang out, but I think it's important to really get to know somebody. That's the most immediate resource. I know we offer free counseling by the University Center here in Greeley. Not sure how many people have been to Greeley, Colorado, but go Bears. But we offer free counseling there. Those are the two main resources that I know. Playing football, you know, they have different resources set up there, but those are the most immediate ones that I know.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. How about Laulea?
Yeah, so we have a lot here at Idaho State, along with Grant. Like, we have a free counseling services here at school as well. We also have Diversity Center, Diversity Resource Center, which they've been great too. They, you know, they put themselves out in the community and create a lot of events that us as student athletes take part of and represent us as well. What else? Yeah, I think that's the two. There are a lot more. There's the Gender Resource Center. And on top of that, there's our SAC, who does a tremendous job with creating Mental Health Week and all that stuff. There's just a lot that I know aren't shown as much, but need to be said a lot more. But yeah, that's pretty much the ones we have here.
Great. Thank you so much. How about you, Sky?
Probably going to miss a few. That's just kind of my brain being. But we do have free counseling. We've got SAC. We've got diversity and equity inclusion committee that's working on like extending resources to a lot more, to get more resources to more students and wellness and stuff. We have this Real Recruit, and it helps with like reporting things, and like also that can help with give people resources to get mental health and stuff. So yeah, my mind's blanking on everything else that we have resources, and stuff. I'll let Erin talk about that and stuff.
Great, thank you so much. What about you, Isaiah?
Yeah, I mean, obviously being new to Weber State, I'm definitely going to leave out a whole bunch of stuff, but I know that there is counseling on campus in places that, you know, that are available to the students to go and be able to confide in someone. But I think, you know, for us, kind of to echo what Grant said, I think, you know, from, you know, at least my perspective, you know, the biggest thing for me is having a coaching staff and a surrounding staff around our specific program that, you know, has made a concerted effort to, you know, to let it be known that they're there for other things other than basketball. And, you know, actually feel comfortable, you know, going into the offices and sitting down with the coach and maybe talking about something that doesn't pertain to, you know, any X's and O's or anything like that. Having a, you know, a real relationship, and a real trust, you know, with those guys. And that doesn't happen everywhere. You know, I've been, to two other universities before this, and this is the first time that I can say that, you know, I genuinely feel that way, you know, with my coaching staff and the surrounding members of our staff. So I think that's really important for athletes, especially, you know, we spend so much time with them every day, and you know, it sounds crazy that you would spend that much time with somebody and be able to say that they, you know, don't really know you or you don't feel comfortable having a conversation with them, but that is definitely a real, you know, a real reality for a lot of athletes. So I'm very lucky and fortunate, you know, to have a staff, you know, head coach all the way down that I, you know, I feel like I have an actual relationship with and actually, you know, cares about, how I'm feeling and somebody that asks me, you know, how I'm feeling every day, not just how my body feels and am I ready to play, but, you know, how am I feeling mentally, emotionally, stuff like that. So.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Before I go to Erin, there is a question for Coach Kenny that I think is kind of relevant to this talk. So, I was going to say Coach McDaniel. How do you identify student athletes that need mental health referrals? So you're a coach. What's helping you make the decision?
Well, you know, that's a good question. So normally with me, the mental health, normally with me, it's really been something that's on the top of my priority list when it comes to, you know, any athletes I deal with. So my approach is I just started doing this probably about 2 years ago. Number one is when anytime a student athlete or anyone come to me saying that they have any type of mental issues, the number one first thing that I do before they even finish, I always congratulate them on, first of all, speaking up. And the second thing I do is, which shocked them, I let them know that I've been in counseling 4 times in my life. And it's amazing how it works because they first of all, they shocked that I announce or I'm upfront about me going to counseling. And so for me, I create that safe environment and I share with them why I went and how it helped me and how I use it to this day. And so, you know, I'm very open about it. I'm very passionate about it because once that lift off your back, you feel better as a person. You feel better as a student athlete. And it's literally like a ton has lifted off. So now you just open up a floodgate. So what I do, I just create an environment to let them know I've been to counseling 4 times in my life. And one of the young man's made a great point earlier. You know, my parents, I lost my dad 3 years ago, but my dad went through a lot. He went to the service. He's a teacher for 36 years, and I can promise you my dad never been to no counseling. My mom is 85, never been to counseling. It's just something we don't do in our community. But back to your question, one of the things I do is I create a safe room, and I'm up front. And I'm quick to let people know, okay, this is not my area of expertise. You know, we have Gloria, who Dr. P is one of the best on the West, so we refer a lot of our student athletes to her, but the initial process is just let them know, first of all, congratulations to you for seeking help. And I always say this, when you have teeth problems, you go see a dentist. When you have skin problems, you see a doctor. You have transmission problem with your car, you go see a mechanic. And now you're having mental health issues. Guess what? There's somebody that can help you that's probably better than that mechanic or that plumber, that person you saw. It just makes them feel good. So that's my strategy, and that's my approach, and it seems to work. So I just try to create a safe environment for my student athletes who come speak with me about mental health.
Great. Thank you so much. Erin, so you're a counselor. What is it that you want? Oops, did somebody try to get my attention? I was going to say, what is it that you want students to know about coming to you, and what could you say to encourage them?
Sorry, something was going on with my mic. you know, I think that the most important thing that we've already talked about is getting to know the students, getting to know the athletes, them getting to know me, and also getting to know the resources that are available outside of athletics. You know, I think that all of the schools in our conference have similar resources. We have resources for diversity. We have resources in terms of counseling, mental health. There are resources within athletics. And I think that the biggest thing that we can do in administration or with as coaches is people who want what's best for our students is to connect with the resources that we have on campus outside of athletics. And, you know, I think of it this way. If a family is always trying to, if the family has chronic problems and they're always trying to fix problems inside their own family, then they may have the problem come up over and over again, right? But if they go out and they ask for help and they look outside of their family, they might get a different perspective. And so what I think in terms of getting the students what they need or the resources, it's how can we connect them and form relationships with the resources that are outside of athletics so that they feel comfortable and empowered to go seek those out for themselves. You know, as a psychologist, I am a big fan of counseling, and I have a bias towards people going, but it is not for everybody. Not everybody has to go to counseling to solve certain things in their lives, and they can solve that in other ways with other types of support. And, you know, if we don't help our students understand what those other levels of support are, then we're doing them a disservice as well.
Great. Thank you so much. So we're getting about 5 minutes till the end of the first hour. I want to get this question in for our four students before the hour is up, but we hope that you'll stay and continue the conversation with us. So for our student athletes, what do you wish people, i.e. your fans, professors, students, teammates, what do you wish people understood about you as a person of color on your campus? So let's start with Isaiah.
I think for me, from a mental health standpoint, but, you know, also from maybe a racial standpoint or standing out that way, I think, you know, the thing that I always probably come back to say when I'm asked this question is that we're people. And from an athlete perspective, I think, you know, whether it's fans or whether it's, you know, staff or faculty or something like that, it's really easy to look at us and only think of, you know, maybe the thing that you may know me the most for. And I know, you know, especially being new, I walk around campus and, you probably see me and assume that I play some kind of sport. And if you maybe know that I play basketball or something like that, that's probably, you know, the extent to which, you know, your thought process goes on me as a person or as a human being. So I think a lot of the thing for athletes, and especially athletes of color, cause like I've talked about before, that kind of layering effect of things that, you have to deal with and stereotypes that are on top of you or expectations. You know, we go through things just like, you know, anybody else would, just like a staff member would, or just like a faculty member, or just like a regular student. You know, we are, at the same time, you know, as we're Division I athletes, we are regular students. You know, we go to school and go to class and get overwhelmed just like everybody else. College is hard sometimes. There's, you know, a lot of days where there seems like, you know, more things to do than we have time to do them. And so I think just, you know, those kinds of things and those kind of normal everyday struggles are not, you know, a luxury or that we're benefited all the time, or we're not always given the benefit of the doubt, in that way. And then, you know, from, you know, the perspective of putting on top of that being, you know, an African American in this country, or an African American on this campus, you know, my life experiences and the things that I compartmentalize and the things that I, you know, I choose to deal with on my own are a lot different than, you know, than somebody else. It's just the color of my skin makes it that way. The way that people look at me make it that way. And so I've grown up in that. And, you know, by this time, you know, you may see me and there's no telling what's going through my head. There's no telling that, you know, the things that, that I'm dealing with or thinking about or pondering, whether they be big or small. So I think, you know, that's a really important thing for me. Anybody kind of, you know, looking on the, from the outside, you know, looking in, so to speak, we're just people. We're people that, you know, have a passion and we've worked hard at it and we've reached a certain point. But at the end of the day, we're all going through, you know, the same stuff. And so, afford us, you know, the same benefit of the doubt, that you would afford, you know, anybody else and vice versa.
Thank you so much, Isaiah. How about you, Laulea?
Yeah, I think the one thing that, like, I've had a lot of conversations with, you know, teammates and friends as well that are also student athletes is, you know, there's more to us than just being a soccer player. There's more to us than just being a student athlete. Like, you know, we deal with things in the community that others may not deal with or they may deal with. But at the end of the day, like, we have a lot on our plate, just like Isaiah said. And, you know, for us, for me, like, a person of color, like, I'm Polynesian, like I said, I've dealt with things on my own, too. Like, I had an incident earlier on this year where I got shot with a BB gun from a drive-by, and never would I ever thought in my life that something like that would happen. And, you know, that's just eye-opening to me because, you know, like, I have different thoughts for, you know, Black people of color and other racial recognitions, and it's scary. It's really scary. But, you know, just like a student athlete, there's more that goes on with us than you'd ever know. And if I didn't have, you know, the right coaching staff, athletic director that reached out to me, I would have never dealt with it in the right way. And it's just, like I said, being vulnerable, allowing yourself to open up and, you know, accepting that it's okay not to be okay. You're going to deal with things and that's life, but it's, you know, allowing yourself to take care of yourself and reaching out to the people that can help you.
Thank you for sharing, Laulea, and sorry that that happened to you. Really disappointed to hear that. Sky, what about you?
I would just like to echo the things that they said, and also just kind of piggybacking off of what Laulea said. This might be a reality that people, that minorities and people that experience different sexual orientations are different in any way, shape, or form. That might be the constant reality and what we have to go through on the daily, but it's not something that we need to suffer through alone. It's not something that we need to just sit in silence with. And also, we're not going to share. I I know that I don't share every little thing that's happened to me, every little microaggression, and I'm not like actually trying to record everything that's happened to me just because that's super unhealthy. But I'm just recognizing that, yeah, we're people, and yes, this is our reality, and there are ways that we can just being cognizant of that, just being aware that this is something that we're dealing with, but we don't need to be pitied. We don't need to be seen differently. It's just something that we're going through, and like any bit of resources or something can help.
Thank you so much, Sky. So Grant, we want to wrap up this section with you. And you had talked a little bit about life outside of the Jersey. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about that and anything else you want to share on this topic.
LeBron James, he summarizes it in a way I really like. He has a slogan that says more than an athlete. And I think that summarizes what Lalea, Sky, and Isaiah have already talked about. Oftentimes when you're a person of color and you're an athlete, you're viewed as one-dimensional. You don't see my values, my background, my faith, my love for people, my passions. You know, you don't really see those things. You're kind of boxed into what you do, not who I am. That's probably the biggest thing that I notice. We're more than athletes. We're all kids that come from parents from somewhere, and we have values and opinions, and we're passionate about things that are outside of our sport. And we want the freedom to be able to express those things without being judged or people wondering, why are they talking so much about this? You know, whether you agree or disagree, it warms my heart to see athletes across the country in light of social justice moves, issues, banding together and protesting and letting their voices be heard. I think it's important regarding mental health because there's also a population of athletes that don't understand that they are more than what their sport is. I've talked to football players that say, man, if I wasn't playing football, I don't know what I'd do. I don't have a clue what I want to do in school. I don't see a future for myself. I think it's important that we let these kids know that they're more than athletes. This is what you do, but it's not who you are. And who you are is so much greater than anything you'll do on the court, field, tennis court. I don't know a lot of sports, but you essentially get what I'm saying. You're so much more than what you do. Who you are is the greatest gift that you're going to give to society. And how can we as the Big Sky and coaches and players help pull that out of you, who you really are? I think that's the biggest thing. But it's basically a summary of what everyone else has already said. So I'm definitely in agreement with them.
Thank you so much. And, you know, one of the things I had mentioned in the pre-panel was, you know, as a teacher at EWU, as a part-time teacher, I have an assignment where I ask my students, what's your job? And I actually had a student athlete in my class who said, my job is to be an athlete. And so on top of getting good grades in school, I work out, I practice, I make sure I eat healthy, I drink my water. It was the first time I had this epiphany of what the level of pressure is for our student athletes, because I just didn't know. And so thank you all the student athletes in this forum right now. Thank you all for what you do and the way you represent our school with so much class and just the way that you prioritize your education. And we're really, really proud and blessed for you all to be representing each one of us. Coach McDaniel, did you have something? I didn't know if you were raising your hand.
No.
Okay, so technically this will conclude the main part of the virtual forum. If you have time to stay on, we'd love to have like a more informal conversation. I did get some questions while we were all kind of sitting here, and I've been putting them into a Word document. But we did have one more question, and I want to address AD Corum and Coach McDaniel. So we'll start with AD Corum because I'm going to start with the woman. and so what I'd like to know is, what is the intersection of mental health and communities of color? Why is the intersection of mental health and communities of color or marginalized groups so important to you as a leader on your campus?
Well, it's really important to me because I want to have a place. I can't control what happens in the community, and I can't control what happens when our teams are traveling and what might happen in the airport, but I really want to try to make sure that we have a spot one place where everyone, no matter who they are, no matter what their differences might be, they feel safe and they feel accepted. And it's my job as a leader to try to create that opportunity, to try to create that safe space. I absolutely can't stand disrespect to anyone for any reason. So being able to have that opportunity where everybody could feel and understand that we're not going to accept any disrespect towards anyone, so that everyone feels that they can thrive. Our motto is to dream big, and I feel like our responsibility is to help student athletes achieve those dreams. And so you can't do those when you don't feel safe for whatever reason. So that's why it's so important for me, because I think that that's really, to be honest, my number one job.
Great. Thank you so much. We appreciate your leadership. Coach McDaniel, what's your perspective on this topic of mental health and communities of color and other marginalized identity, and why is it so important?
Well, I tell you, it's really important because, you know, we as leaders, you know, we provide resources, we provide opportunities. And for me, I always talk to my team, you know, you have a chance to be part of something special. And, you know, for me, I'm really fortunate, you know, because here at Sac State, Mark Orr, as I mentioned earlier, is African-American leader. My supervisor, Marcus Jennings, is a African-American leader. And so, you know, mental health, how does tie in with mental health is, I know we mentioned this earlier, and Debbie Corum kind of mentioned this, but I tell you, leadership is tough and it's lonely. Let me tell you why. And I just thought this actually, because, you know, when you're a leader, you have to make decisions, and unfortunately you can't please everybody. And when you try to make decisions and you have to let a few people down, you have to remove some people from a squad, or you have to put somebody in isolation due to, the grades are not where you like for them to be. And so sometimes we as coaches need some mental help because we have to make tough decisions, and those decisions are not fun. And so for me, I just want to provide opportunities. You know, when I got into this profession 22 years ago, my number one goal was just provide opportunities. And for me, I love recruiting. I love it when I can call a senior in high school and offer them a scholarship, and it just changed their life. It changed their family life. And I tell every recruit, I don't like workouts. Sometimes I don't even like track meets, but I love recruiting because I get a chance to meet some amazing families, families from different backgrounds. I meet rich families, wealthy families, poor families, families from all over the world. And so, but again, that is providing resources, opportunities, and a chance to be part of something special. So, it's a great, area. I always say this sport is a noble sport. And it's something where you can touch many lives. But again, you know, we mentioned something earlier. I think we as coaches sometimes need some mental health because we have to make some tough decisions, you know, either with scholarship or, you know, we have to remove a staff member or, we have to remove somebody due to academics. So it's tough. I mean, anybody who enjoys that shouldn't be in this profession. So, but again, that is my role. Again, I cherish it. And it's really fun. I tell people all the time, I'll do it for free if I didn't have mortgage or car note. But those are things that I think as a leader, you know, we try to provide. And again, you know, just the resources, the opportunities, and a chance to be part of something special.
Thank you, Coach. I'm glad that you don't have to do it for free because you deserve to get paid. thank you all, you know, Laulea, Sky, Isaiah, Grant, AD Corum, Coach McDaniel, Aaron, and then, you know, the people who put this together, we'd be remiss not to thank them. And so we've got Janie and Denise and, oh gosh, who am I forgetting?
Gloria.
Gloria, thank you. I'm like, I saw her name at the bottom. Anyway, thank you so much for setting up this great conversation. I hope the participants give us a strong, you know, strong numbers in the poll, but I learned so much tonight. I'm sure each one of our panelists learned so much tonight too. So with that, I'll say good night and thank you all for being here. And yes, clap, 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 fantastic students. We're proud to have you as part of the Big Sky Conference. So good night, everybody.